Fair District Board of Directors meeting to order. We have a quorum. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Next item on the agenda is approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
I'll second.
A motion and a second to approve the agenda as is. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Next item, public matters not on the agenda. These are discussion items only. No action will be taken. Any person may address the board. Please limit your discussion to 5 minutes or less. Anybody in the audience like to address the Air District Board at this time? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to administrative matters. Item number one is the minutes of May 17, 2016. Are there any comments? Anybody?
Move approval of the minutes. Oops. You got a correction?
No, I was just going to move approval, but you did it, and I'll second it.
Class beat you to it. I have a motion and a second.
Yes, he did. He's so fast.
To approve as submitted. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries. Item number two is a resolution honoring Chris Pierce on her retirement.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the Air District Board of Directors. This item is honoring Chris on her retirement. And, I've worked with Chris for about 2 years now. Chris has been with the Air District for over 14 years, I think. Yeah. About 14 years, and I was kind of thinking in terms of Chris is the glue that holds everything together, you know, and there's different types of glue. There's Elmer's glue wall we used in grade school. There's glue sticks. Then there's super glue. I think that's what Chris is super glue. So what you have handed out to you is a resolution that I would like to have adopted and approved. And then I would recommend presenting it to Ms. Pierce, if you would.
Thank you, Jim. Everybody had a chance to review the resolution. Very nice.
Absolutely. Very nice. I'd just add, Jim, that when I first started here, Chris was working for Jim Harris, and then that moved to Mike Boitano, and then that moved to you. And she has been the training officer for all new air pollution control officers. She's
trained us well.
Held it together. So congratulations, Chris, on a well-deserved retirement.
And I'd like to add that Chris is a joy to work with. I know whenever I have a question as a relatively new supervisor, there's always a wonderful response with a smile. And my constituents who call the Air District have nothing but great to say about Chris. They mention you by name. Oh, do you know Chris? Yeah, so good for you.
I'm also the infamous voice of Amador County.
Yes, the voice on the recorder. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, Chris, we're going to miss you. Thank you for all your years of service, and enjoy your retirement.
I will, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, likewise, and appreciate your years of service here, and good luck, and have a great retirement.
Okay.
I'd move approval of the resolution honoring Chris Pierce and on her retirement.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries.
And we'll have the chairman come down. And Chris, if you would step over.
Go up.
Oh, there you go.
We'll show up in the minutes.
This is a resolution of the Amador Air District Board of Directors Whereas Chris Pierce is happily married to her husband, Mark, and the two of them are proud parents to their beloved and spoiled pets. Whereas Chris enjoys quilting and is considered to be an artist and expert in quilting by our co-workers, customers, and visitors that come in to view her work on display in her office space. And whereas Chris began her career with the Air District in 2002, and Chris has been instrumental in the growth, development, and success of the Amador Air District. Whereas Chris created many of the district's administrative programs, including the database tracking system for complaints and spreadsheets used for tracking source emissions. Whereas Chris has weathered many challenging times throughout her tenure at the district and has been responsible for providing a stable, constant, and dependable presence at the district. Whereas Chris has served the district for over 14 years of faithful and dedicated service to enhance and improve the quality of life of all residents within the Amador Air District. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Amador Air District's Board of Directors, the State of California, which said board does hereby adopt this resolution commending Chris Pierce for her many years of service to the citizens of the County of Amador. Foregoing resolution duly passed and adopted by the Amador Air District Board of Directors at a regular meeting thereof held the 16th day of August 2016 by unanimous vote.
There you go.
That was a good one.
What?
Bad. You're too bad.
You're too slow.
Which takes us to our next item, how to fill those large shoes. Item number three, introduction of Herminia Perry, administrative technician. Jim?
Yes, and Herminia is here, sitting right next to Chris, and I would like to introduce you all to Herminia. Ms. Perry has worked for the Mark Thomas & Company Incorporated in Sacramento for more than 9 years. Mark Thomas & Company is a leading California-based transportation and municipal engineering firm specializing in civil and structural engineering, land surveying, landscape architecture, urban design, and district management services. Ms. Perry has a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration and has worked in a marketing capacity developing large proposal packages. Over the years of service, she has been promoted to a training position, sharing her expertise with marketing coordinators and management employees corporate-wide. Herminia lives in Ione with her husband and keeps busy with her three boys under the age of five. And please join me in welcoming Herminia to the Air District.
Thank you, Jim. Herminia, welcome.
Welcome.
Probably ought to introduce ourselves, seeing as none of our name things are correct. So,
Herminia, you'll meet us all eventually, but to my left is Supervisor Morgan.
Actually, my name tag is correct at the moment, but
I'm not sure who I am right now.
No,
you're Lewis.
You're Lewis. Yeah,
I'm
okay.
Not Lewis.
I'm not Forrester.
This is correct, but I'm not the chairman.
I'm not Forrester.
I'm Robin Peters with the City of Sutter Creek City Council. Supervisor Plass, to my right, Supervisor Ronetto, Supervisor-elect Pat Crew, currently a City of Jackson Council member, and Supervisor Boitano on my far right. Others that are absent today that you'll meet eventually include Patrick Wirt from Ione, John Colburn from
Plymouth.
Who else are we missing?
Tim Knox from Amador City.
From Amador City. Representatives on the Air District include a representative of the five cities and the five supervisors from the county. Total of 10 of us. Is that right?
Just Richard Forrester's not here.
Richard Forrester is missing as well. That's correct.
Yeah. Beautiful. It's a pleasure meeting you all, and I look forward to working with you guys.
Herminia, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome.
Okay. On to item number four, we have a public hearing for fiscal year 16-17 district budget. Jim?
Okay, and this is the public hearing for the 2016-2017 budget, and you do have a handout that was sent around just moments ago. It's the same budget that's in your packet. However, I added a pinkish kind of line there which shows the actual for the last fiscal year, and that was requested at the last meeting. So that information is with you right now. One other note, on the previous revenue sheet line 45, 45460, the ARB subvention is listed at $46,800 and is normally received in two installment payments of approximately $23,400. However, during the 15-16 year, only one payment was received. We did not receive the second payment until after the end of the 15-16 fiscal year, and so therefore it went into this current year's revenue line. This will result in an additional approximately $23,400 in that line, 45460. On the expense sheet, to account for this additional revenue that wasn't in last year but is being captured this year, I've put it into the special projects line, 54712. We had previously budgeted $80,000, but with the additional amount, it's now $103,400. So I just wanted to point that out, and you have a summary that shows the current cash reserves that do reflect the end of the fiscal year and starting this new 16-17 fiscal year, the operating cash, the total account balance, and then, of course, the budget for this year, the revenue and the expenses. Those sheets are in there. Chris has also attached the proof of publication for this public hearing, and those were the main things I wanted to draw your attention to. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And then, as I said, we're here for the public hearing.
Thanks, Jim. I just want to... there's a discussion later on in... an agenda item later on in the packet dealing with the Pine Needle program and the expenses associated with that. And we talked a lot about it over the past few months, and dedicated reserve monies for that program. But I note that, unless I'm reading this incorrectly, I note that the cost for that program is actually included in this year's budget. So we're not really dipping into our reserves for that. Is that correct? In other words, our reserve picture, this is a zero-sum budget for the fiscal year, so that our reserves don't appear to be affected by that Pine Needle program this year. Is that correct?
This year, that's correct, because we continue to add to our reserves. So, for example, at the end June 30th, 2016 of this year, we added an additional $61,000 approximately into reserves. So, had we not been adding this additional money into reserves, then ultimately we would be pulling, it would be reflective. But to answer your question, because we're still adding money into cash reserves, it's kind of a wash. We're not affecting it. But the intention was to use that money as well as the money for the CCAD program out of the cash reserves.
That $61,000 that you're referring to, I'm looking at the fiscal year 15-16 end of year report. It's toward the end of our packet.
Okay.
And I don't see that.
That's not listed there. This was just provided to me from the county, from Karen Scaccinosi. It's a number that she just developed, and it's actually not official yet with respect to the county, so it's not reflective there. But what I was provided from her is that we will, in fact, once the county finalizes its budget, we will carry $61,000 into our reserve this year. And if you remember, last year we had a total of $457,000 in cash reserve. So it's gone up approximately $61,000.
So, Jim, as I recall, there was a small committee of us that looked at that cash reserve with an intention to identify projects that could reduce it some, because it's a large amount.
Yeah.
So this last year, we obviously haven't accomplished that.
We didn't so much because, for a couple reasons actually, you know, we just recently started the city-county agency program, so that just started as of July 1st of this fiscal year, and we did, you know, take some of the money. So, for example, if we hadn't increased the budget for the BIN program to $70,000, then we would see a different picture. If we hadn't increased that, we would see a larger amount going into cash reserve. So in a way, what we're doing is we're kind of slowly reducing the amount we're putting into cash reserves with the goal of, you know, to have a balanced budget and to not have money going into cash reserve, and then utilize the programs that we've discussed to then chip away at that cash reserve to a level that we all agree is prudent.
Yeah, the goal is not to spend the money.
Yeah.
The goal is to put meaningful projects on the ground.
Put it to good use.
Measurable goals.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I didn't make that clear, I'm sorry, but I think the subcommittee, including Lewis and me and I forget who else, we really focused on that, is, you know, coming up with meaningful projects to spend that money on in hopes of not continuing to keep inflating the reserve.
Right, and as I said, we're just starting the city-county agency program, and we're getting a pretty good response initially, so we will be outlaying money in that program this fiscal year. I have an agenda item on programs that you've seen probably, and we're going to discuss those and how we can move forward with what programs we deem, you know, reasonable.
Jim, just for clarification, the city-county agency program you speak of is the sort of subsidizing or participation in acquisition of CARB-compliant equipment.
Exactly.
For all agencies.
Exactly.
You know, one other thing, Jim, I wonder if we shouldn't be looking at maybe doing some type of program, having a chipper available. We're looking at having a chipper available at a stationary location. What they're probably going to need almost is where, how you figure out, how to decide what roads to put on, I don't know. But people are going to need access to probably a chipper with all these dead trees and stuff coming down. It's going to be, and maybe PG&E will do a lot of them if there's power lines, but that's going to be a huge demand, I think.
Yeah, and in the agenda item number 6, we're going to discuss a chipper program. So that is something we'll get to in just a moment.
Is that in your budget, though?
It's not in the budget, but keep in mind, we have the cash reserve, and if we decide in a month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever, we can always do a transfer of funds to be able to provide for that type of program. But for right now, we had to kind of draw a line somewhere and say, okay, this is where our budget is, and this is what we're funding right now to be able to bring something forward for approval and public hearing.
To that point, Jim, to get back on budget discussion, in the new sheet that Chris just handed out under miscellaneous revenues, 47,890. Last year we budgeted $29,395 for that revenue source, and the actual shows apparently zero, just shows a blank there, and now this year we're budgeting $43,95. How do we miss that far last year? I would assume that this miscellaneous revenue sources are sources that we either authorities to construct that we know are coming up or something that
actually, if I'm not mistaken, that's the BV. Okay.
The miscellaneous revenue is for the things like the authority to construct. They're for engineering fees that are related to those. They also have to do with if we assess any fines for burning prohibited material, smoking out the neighbor and doing it on purpose. Also, if a company changes hands, they also have to go through the process on that. we have no way of knowing going into the year if we're going to have one company want to add new equipment or come into the county, or if we're going to have none, or if we're going to have 10. This year this last year we got a lot of authority to construct between Mule Creek build out and a couple of other things that have changed hands, moved around.
Well, those all have an independent line item in the sheet that you handed out, revenue.
It's
line
all
item.
That
engineering
same miscellaneous line number, though.
I'm looking at that.
So the miscellaneous is a summation of all of the other authority,
above.
Construct, change of ownership, engineering fees, fines. Those are all like subline items under
right.
the same.
Now the budgeted $25,000 that you see there was the BV money.
He's looking on the revenue 47890 line.
Correct.
Okay.
We budgeted for that. Now it's clear to me that we budgeted for all of those items a total of $29,395, and then all of those line items are
roll up into that.
So there should be a total number there then of all those line items in the actual column, or.
Okay, what in the pink line?
Right, that's the actual column.
That's the actual column. Those are the actual fees that came in. The actual amount that was requested for that was the $29,000, and the reason we did that was because we were anticipating the $25,000 from BV for the grant.
Okay.
And then there was an additional $4,000. That's just kind of like a guesstimate so that we're not totally out
okay.
of...
Actually,
so that's
actually,
the big spread between what we requested in anticipation last year of the 25 from BV.
Right.
That closed down, so that didn't come. So now this year's request is more in line with last year's actual.
Correct.
Yeah, and let me just add one point of clarification. The 29,395 does represent what we were expecting to get from BV, which was $25,000, plus an additional $4,395 from the prior year that we hadn't spent, for a grand total of $29,395 that we thought last year we were going to have. Well, since the $25,000 didn't come in, we're left with just the $4,395 that we're carrying into this year's budget. So that's what that $29,395 reflects. The $25,000 we thought we were going to get plus $4,395 left over from the previous year.
From the purchase of the Jeep.
The vehicle.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. These are essentially the same numbers that we reviewed at our last meeting, Jim. With the exception of the $23,000 carryover
right.
from last year. Are there any other questions or comments about the proposed budget? This is a public hearing. I suppose I need to open the public hearing and allow the public to provide input on our proposed budget. Hearing none, then we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the board. Further discussion or a motion?
I will recommend approval of the 16-17 budget for the Air District.
I have a motion to approve the budget.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries. Now, procedurally, Jim, you'll bring back at our next meeting a resolution for formal adoption.
In October. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Chris points. Chris will be glad. She's happy.
Okay, on to item number 5.
Okay, and this is the smoke reduction bin program, also known as a pine needle bin program. And at the last meeting, there was a request to have an agenda item to discuss this program. I've put together a memo here, and currently budgeted at $70,000 per year. We receive roughly $18,000 annually in revenue from the burn permits. I think it's clear that based upon burn permit revenue only, the program isn't sustainable. But we did discuss this previously and decided to put some money towards the program, at least in the short term, at the annual level of $70,000. We have gotten very positive response from folks on this program. We have been told that they have noticed less smoke in neighborhoods where we're operating these bins, and the program continues to be very well received. We do end the program in about November, and we do not operate it during the wet season, and then we resume it in about April. So it's roughly a 7-month program, averaging $10,000 per month in cost. One of the problems with the programs is the commercial and professional landscapers depositing materials in the bins, causing them to fill up and increasing the rate at which our budget is expended. District staff, Matt and Chris, have been really helpful in monitoring these bins and trying to, you know, put out additional signage that, you know, states that these bins are not for the commercial operator. And but the problem does persist. Occasionally we do get garbage and we get materials dumped in the bins. We believe that additional education, outreach, and advertising specifically focused will help alleviate some of these problems. Attached to this memo and agenda item is a letter that I submitted to CAPCOA for a U.S. EPA multi-purpose grant. I requested $40,000 in support of this program. I just wanted you to be aware that we are being proactive and trying to seek out, search out funding sources for our programs. We also requested 3 EBAM air quality monitors. What I have been told, nothing official has been produced, but what I've been told is that we may be granted 1 EBAM air monitor. We were not approved for the $40,000 for this program, and we were not approved for the 3 EBAMs. We were approved for 1 monitor. Now, we haven't got anything definitive, but at this point, based upon what the message that I've been given is we may in fact receive a monitor through this grant. So again, I wanted to point out the fact that any opportunity that we have to seek out additional funding sources, we will be pursuing.
On that topic, the last paragraph of this grant application, I guess to Mr. Abbs, talked about our request for those monitors and that they would be acquired through the EPA grant and be placed near schools to protect the health of the students. I thought our discussion about monitors was relative to placing those closer to our western boundary of the county to ascertain pollution transference, if you will, from San Joaquin County into Amador, and all related to our whether we're in attainment or out of attainment as far as EPA is considered.
The transport issue. Yes, you're absolutely right. However, in looking into this grant, we learned that it was very important for us to structure our request in a way that it showed direct improvement to the health, in particular of schools. And so we were kind of playing the game here to structure this for the best potential outcome. But you're right. Our intention is and continues to be, you know, if we are granted a monitor, our intention is to use it the way we see fit to use it. And I absolutely believe we would be using it at our boundary and in some way, shape, or form looking at that transport issue. But that was worded that way specifically.
It's all about making an emotional argument rather than a logical one.
There you go.
To get grant money.
So Jim, the $40,000 that we requested and were not approved for, can you drill down on that a little bit and help us understand why we were not approved for that? Or do you know?
You know, I haven't received anything official, and Matt and I have spoke with some people up at Air Resources Board, and they seem to be kind of, they rolled out, offered this grant and asked for, you know, requests from the air districts, and that's why you see this letter. We put together a request, but it seems like now they're kind of figuring out as they go along, and they don't know for sure exactly how it is or what it exactly they're going to do, but they did not give us any specifics on why we didn't get that. But I did, make it, I felt like a pretty significant case for why, you know, support of our program and the tune of $40,000 would be a good use of those funds, but they did not, they didn't go for it, and I haven't gotten an explanation yet. As soon as I do, I will bring it back to the board.
Will there be an annual cycle on this grant? I mean, will this come around again in the future, or is this a one-time shot?
That I'm not sure. I'll certainly keep my eyes out for it, and if it does come around again, we'll certainly be going after it.
So,
bins were placed in disadvantaged communities. Would that be more likely to get the grant? We'll have to make them available to River Pines.
What did each school do?
Can I make a note of that?
Yeah.
Jim, could you also elaborate just a bit on the commercial professional landscaper depositing materials in the bins? How big a problem is that?
Well,
figure that out based on.
We've gotten reports from folks that act as kind of our chaperones, because anytime we place these bins out, we've got a system set up where we give like a homeowner that is willing to take responsibility for kind of coordinating the project, helping get information out to their neighbors so that the neighbors can take advantage of the program. Some of these folks have reported to us that they see commercial, professional landscapers and using the bins, and we get reports directly back from them. And I don't know that any of us have actually seen them use it, but I know Matt, you may have more information on it, but we've gotten reports that and then plus Matt goes up and, you know, sticks his head in these bins and he can sees what goes in them, and sometimes I think, you know, he sees stuff that clearly looks like it's coming from someone who's, you know, doing some sort of commercial work.
The other big problem that we have with that, and that Jim hasn't addressed with you, is that the material that's going into the bin, the argument is made, well, if I don't put it in your bin, I'm going to burn it for the owner I'm working for. It's still coming out of the same area. It's still helping us meet the need to get the burning out of the area. So we're kind of caught in the middle of going, well, you can't do that at all and have them burn, or kind of sort of just say it's to our advantage to get the smoke out of the area. So it's kind of difficult in that sense. We would prefer the landscapers not to do it, but which do you want? Which does the air district really want? The no burning or the no landscapers putting it in the bins?
Thanks for muddying that whole picture.
You're welcome.
Come on, we like black and white.
Of it as a gift, a parting gift.
Well, and the thing is they can't burn right now anyway, so they're charging their customers, you know, to take it away and dispose of it, yet they're using our bins at no cost. So it's really not a fair, you know, fair thing going on.
Okay. What the trend line in cost, we've done this now for, how many seasons have we done this? Well, the Pine Needle program has been around a while, but the expansion of this program is what, a year or a year and a half old? 2 years.
Say two, yeah.
You see a trend line in cost, in usage, or have we sort of hit a plateau? I don't see the cost increasing much over
up.
The past 12 months or so.
The usage has definitely gone up. But I think that it's kind of the whole thing of one person gets their property cleaned up the way that they want and can maintain it, and somebody else is going, oh, my God, I've got to get my property cleaned up. So it kind of maintains, I think, as it kind of rolls through the neighborhoods with one person doing it this year, another person doing it the next year, so the volume kind of stays the same, which keeps our costs kind of the same.
Well, and we carefully monitor the program to stay within our budget. Trust me, we could spend double or triple this amount of money. There's the demand out there.
I've been asked by more than one neighborhood, including my own, if we can't have these bins, not year-round, but, you know, not in the winter, but constantly. Continuously,
yeah.
So I mean it's and you know we have like a little almost joke in our neighborhood. It's like, yeah, go ahead, spend all the time picking up your pine needles and putting them in the bin. You're going to do it again in a month, you know. So it's a continuous need.
Yeah, so we do very much throttle the, you know, putting these bins out there so that we don't overextend ourselves and spend more than our budget. So we're real careful to do that. But, you know, the demand is out there. And the list you see is the programs we've done over the last year, the locations, and how much we spent on them, the number of days that are there. They're there. And, you know, we specifically limit those days. Some of these where you see 18 days, 38 days, 30 days, some of those people wanted them much longer. But we pulled them knowing that we had a budget to work within.
Question on that, Jim. The Forest View one, it was there for 30 days, and the cost was, $195?
Yep. That's one
foot. Ah, but if you were to look at it on this year's expenses, that's where you're going to see it, because it went in the last day of June. That's the drop for the bin.
16, so this is... Well, yeah, but some of the other ones were there for 18 days for $400-some bucks, 38 days for $3,057.
Again, for the most part, they're splitting between the two fiscal years. Burnt Cedar split between the two fiscal years.
Okay, so you're really not seeing what the low the tonnage was or whatever? Including?
No, we're not.
Okay.
Not for the full span.
So the way we're agendized today is to act on a recommendation.
Oh. Excuse me. On Burton Cedar, it wasn't split between the fiscal years. What it is it's a cul-de-sac, and one woman basically goes in and does all the work for her neighbors because they're too old and can't do it. So she basically does it, and she fills up the dumpster about twice.
So one question, did you have to, how many tons of material is this roughly? Do you have those numbers?
Tons of material...
What, you're 64,500. Is that just material? Is that also hauling too in there? I think there's some hauling charges.
Oh yeah, yeah. Hauling charges are included along with the disposal, which is
Can I just give?
Sure.
I'm having a difficult time hearing. I'm deaf anyway, and my ears are plugged up from something that's going on.
Maybe.
And I think you had a question about the tonnage.
For
a full year, August 2015 to July 2016, we hauled 214 boxes, and that was 485.7 tons. Understand that pine needles are very light.
talking.
And currently, of that, the total was for the 12 months was 49,4, of which 86 was for tonnage disposal. So it's about 15% of the total goes to disposal or processing, not quite disposal. And we charge $195 currently to take that box to wherever it goes, pick it up, and we consolidate, and then it all goes to Vicini. So it's to get it to the site, pick it up, and get it to the recycler.
And you just switch out boxes, Paul, and bring a new empty one to replace the full one you're hauling off?
Most of the times we do that. Sometimes if it warrants it and it's close, we'll just go get it, bring it to Pine Grove, empty it, and bring it back. Generally, we like to bring a swap.
Thanks, Paul. Any other questions for Mr. Molinelli?
No.
Yeah, it has increased dramatically.
Microphone.
It's increased dramatically. I mean, we used to get 4 walking floors a week. Now we're up to 6-7 a week, and it's overwhelming my 4-acre site because they don't decompose that fast, and I can't get rid of it. So if we go to more boxes, you're going to almost have to find someplace else to dispose of, and that's going to cost you a lot more money to haul it to Sacramento.
I'm sure the Butte fire is probably a motivator, too.
Yeah. But and then we're going to have all these treetops that we're going to have to do something with.
Regarding this tree mortality issue?
Yeah. So we're working on maybe putting a yard up country, maybe at the Cedar Mill, and maybe some of these people can start bringing their stuff there, and maybe we can grind it right directly if the Cogen opens up right into one of Paul's walking floors, into his walking floor, and he can haul it directly to there, and maybe we can make a dollar off of it.
In the South, they use those things for landscape.
Yeah.
And they pile them up, and well, you've probably been there. I know you go back east quite a bit.
Yeah.
And they water that pile of needles, and it holds the water.
Well, if you do that here, you make a big pile, and it catches on fire.
Well, that's true. It's spontaneous combustion.
Yeah, and with Onetto's suggestion that we are going to have to come up, I'm going to have to come up, the county is, or somebody, maybe we can consolidate, we're going to have to come up with a portable grinder to put up country because there's just too much stuff to deal with.
Thanks, Merv.
Yep, thank you.
So it's been an interesting discussion. The recommendation is to provide direction to staff regarding long-term funding of the program, and we've talked about the reality that the demand is such that we could expand the program 2 or 3 times over if we had the funds for it, and the demand would be there for that. However, at the tail end of this process, there's a choke point, and that is the composting facility that can't handle any more material than it currently is receiving. So it doesn't seem like any notion of expansion of this program is feasible at this point. Not that that was your recommendation, but
yeah. You
know, if there were ever any discussion or thought of expanding the program, that may not be in the cards at this time, given the constraints that we have.
Yeah, we do. We're limited on what we can do. And so for the short term and part of this budget year, we're budgeted $70,000 so we can maintain the program as we had last fiscal year. Beyond that, you know, we can take it up at another meeting and determine, you know, what we want to do then.
I understand what Merv is saying, and I hope we can work something out, perhaps. But there is an alternative. You know, we can have a yard waste collection program right at the houses, as we do in the cities.
In other words, an eight.
An eighth of Ben's.
An ACES sponsored program where individual homeowners have more than one bin. You have a...
As you have in Sutter Creek and in Jackson. So that is an option.
Now, you say ACES sponsored. Do you mean ratepayer sponsored?
Right.
Well, it's all... Everything's ratepayer sponsored.
Yeah. Okay.
Even the pine needle.
Everything we do.
Right.
Is sponsored by somebody.
Thanks, Paul.
And, you know,
that doesn't necessarily alleviate Merv's problem with room.
Right.
But
yeah, because whether you're collecting it that way or the bins, your operations are to still bring it to a recycle facility, right, rather than put it directly into the landfill runs. Is that correct?
I have to be open and honest here. I mean, there are other places to deliver it to, by the way.
But Paul, have you done any customer research or anything to see?
I'm going to get closer.
I'm sorry. Has ACES done any research to see if customers might be willing to pay for a waste recycle program?
We haven't got that far to be at the...
Okay.
However, we're getting a lot of calls.
Yes. Yes. Calls I've heard it. Definitely. Right. Thank you.
Well, that's something else. At some point, I mean, I'm probably okay with it now, but there might be a request by some of the supervisor or two or multiple ones, and maybe have some of the all the sites maybe changed or a little more equitable towards districts. I'm not complaining quite yet.
As far as the bin location,
sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I personally really like our green waste container that we have in town. I mean, I utilize it every other week, and it's usually full to the hilt. So
they have a special compacting system too that they really
yeah, you get up in there and smash it down. But it's a great service, and you know, it's right there in the yard, and you wheel it out every 2 weeks, and it's gone. And, you know, we pay for it, and I don't mind it.
So can I draw the conclusion that there's general consensus amongst the board that the program continues as is, without expansion, without contraction, unless and until something changes?
Quick question.
Fair?
I'm good with that.
That's fair.
I'd say it's generally fair. I had a quick question for Jim Cargue. Jim, did we ever have one in Fiddletown?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Okay.
I just spread the word. Maybe we should have done a better.
You know, I know it doesn't help Merv's situation. But I think maybe it's worth maybe taking a look at the green waste containers up there for folks. Want to play, you got to pay.
Yeah, as part of the garbage service.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something that we can look at the county.
On the waste management
side. On the waste management side of things. I know a guy.
I bet you do.
Does that get into a regional rate structure, Paul, if we were to make the offerings like are in Sutter Creek and Jackson to this upcountry area that utilizes that the most, would that be restricted to rate increases in that area, or would it be system-wide?
I think in the end that might be your call, but everything else we do is spread out everywhere. It's allocated... Certain things are allocated to the cities. So generally speaking, it's spread out over the total customer base.
But you have individual contracts with the cities, though, right? With Sutter
right.
Creek and Jackson. I'm talking about unincorporated.
For us to
area.
Implement a program in the city, all we need is carts. The trucks we have. So we have no additional equipment, wear and tear, and some transportation. So the cost would be relatively... small, I think, to implement if it's spread out among the total unincorporated area, for example, or that area of, we'd like to offer throughout the county in the unincorporated area, so we would spread the cost out over all of the customers. I think the cost would be very small at that point.
We get back to the age-old argument of mandatory collection. And, you know, then that...
That's never...
Yeah, that brings...
That's never going to happen.
No, I know that.
Yeah.
It brings them out of the woodwork when you start doing that. But, I mean, it does create an economy of scale because you're going...
Without
there.
A doubt, yeah.
Good. Jim, do you have enough direction from the board?
Yes, at this point I do.
Great. Paul and Merv, thanks for your input. I appreciate it. Okay, let's move on to item number... Where are we? Six. This is the... Programs line item, lawnmower replacement, wood stove changeout, wood chipper, etc. Jim?
Yeah, and I put this on as kind of a catch-all of programs. We did discuss a lawnmower replacement program last time, and there was a question regarding from the board of directors regarding, you know, to what extent do lawnmowers contribute to air pollution and impact air quality. And I did some research on it. I couldn't find anything, you know, real specific to it, although I did find some information that seemed to indicate that in urbanized areas, approximately 5% of air pollution can be attributed to lawnmowers. And so then I made the deduction that Amador County, a rural area, contributes. The contribution from lawnmowers is far less than the 5% number. Assumption based upon lower population density and the fact that there are less lawns that need to be mowed in a rural setting. So to get to that answer, I think we can say that, yes, in fact, the lawnmower contribution to air pollution in Amador County is going to be less than 5% and perhaps significantly less than 5%. And I know that was a question that came up last time, so I wanted to follow up with that.
Yeah, and I'll stop you there. That was my request for information. And Jim, I appreciate your drilling down on that. I was surprised at the numbers, mm-hmm. how small the numbers were, and in my mind, I think we could probably put that concept to rest and move forward with other programs.
Sure.
Now, that was a good educational experience. I hope it didn't take you forever to get that information, but I do appreciate it.
Little digging.
Yeah, so keep going there.
Okay, and so then on the wood stove changeout, that has also been discussed periodically. And what I did is I showed that it was last run in 2002. The district expended $63,900, and I think there were 214 stoves that were done, somewhere around there. In 2013, the district considered a program, and I attached the information that was brought to you in 2013. However, there was a concern that the $300 to $400 grant on a $3,500 plus stove was not a large enough grant, especially since the exhaust flume upgrades required for an EPA certified stove can add to the project. So as a result, the district did not move forward on a wood stove program in 2013. As far as now, the district may consider starting a new wood stove program. However, we'll need to determine what budget we would want to put towards it, and if we wanted to look at a larger grant amount per project, if that was necessary. So that was, again, a discussion item we had on wood stoves, and I just kind of wanted to bring that back in front of you for any consideration at this point.
So a question I'd have, Jim, is rather than doing that, could we maybe widen out the program to where we help some of the cities and the county get more CARB compliant? I guess whether it be vehicles or small equipment, could we do that instead?
Small equipment. So we do have our program that we just started.
Expand that a little, maybe?
I think, you know, whatever the board felt like was the, you know, appropriate direction. The wood stove program can be pretty extensive as far as the management and the tracking and the monitoring of it. So my only thought is if we were to go to a wood stove program, I would really encourage us staff coming back with maybe a different approach to it, something that is a little more streamlined, straightforward, and not as time-consuming as far as the demands on our limited staff.
So, as we did with the lawnmower program, you know, we looked at that bang for the buck level of comfort.
Yeah.
What about this program in terms of improvements to air quality? Where does it fall in the perspective of air quality improvements compared with lawnmower changeout? Now we have wood stove, we have the pine needle bin program, and then the city county program. I'm having trouble understanding
to what benefit,
to what level, to what degree the benefits accrue.
Sure. Sure.
Cost benefit analysis.
Cost benefit. Right. And yeah, I don't have that right now in front of me. I don't know, Matt, if you have any information on, you know, to what extent the wood stove. I know it's a popular program in other districts.
You know, we roll into. I head from my house to my office, and I roll into Jackson down the grade on a cool fall morning, and you know there's a smoke layer, but I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know if that's from lousy wood stoves or fireplaces or people out back burning the pile that's been accumulating all summer. So it's hard to understand how effective a wood stove changeout program is without better data. Matt, I'm sure you have a handful of data there.
Yeah, so there's no real clear answer on the impacts. Here we're talking smoke, PM2.5. If you go with an engine program, we're talking about NOx and ozone. So, you know, you're talking about different pollutants and the effects they're having. I would say that upcountry there is an impact with the stoves. Definitely. I mean, because a lot of people are using them for their, you know, primary heat source, especially in the winters, and so it does get smoky up there. So, you know, can we measure the impact? Probably not, you know, unless we get this EBAM and put in the right place. But, you know, that's what you're talking about. So how, you know, if you're affecting upcountry, you know, you're probably going to see some impact, a lessening of smoke. You know, it's hard to say the effects and how could you measure it.
You know, to Robin's point and this discussion, I was going to point out that the whole reason with our attainment issue and so forth is because of the placement of the current monitoring being in the basin of Jackson, and that if we were to consider a program like this, might we get the most bang for the buck by offering it to, I would say, particularly Sutter Creek and Jackson, just because of their location. They're in a hole, they're in a basin, and they get impacted the way Robin described it coming down the grade there, because they sit in that basin, and that wood just holds, or that smoke just holds in those basins.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have a measurable effect, I would think, because of the monitors at the CHP station if you did it in Jackson.
Right. So like I said, remember, what are you monitoring? That monitor is doing 8-hour ozone. It's not doing PM2.5. So let's say smoke.
Oh, EBAM doesn't monitor PM2.5?
It's 2.5 smoke. I mean, for more or less, it's going for particulate. Or it does PM10 also. It can do that. But your 8-hour ozone, your NOx, and all those other precursors, that's our attainment pollutant. And that's the only one being measured. We don't have to deal with, like, these other districts that have multiple monitors. We just have one, and it's only measuring 8-hour ozone, and that's it. So it's unfortunate that it's sitting in a basin, yes.
Yeah, well, and we were in compliance until they changed the goalposts.
Right, they moved it, they moved the target. But, you know, still, and we've talked with some of the CARB people even recently, and the trend and how they think that with the transport, how it's going to affect us. And since those upwind monitors are actually doing better, then we're going to probably see the number go down. We just don't want them to keep changing that target, right?
Right.
You know, changing that number on us, because that kills it. But yes, it bothers us. We were in attainment.
Well, to John's point about Sutter Creek and Jackson, now we're doing the, you know, the big pine needle collection containers upcountry, and I guess to change out your stove, you couldn't change it out and put natural gas in, because then you'd eliminate the cost of the flue pretty much. Natural gas is pretty doggone clean burning, and you can buy a pretty good stove for about $1,500.
Natural gas stove?
Natural gas. That's the best thing I ever did. I used to cut a lot of wood. And my allergist said, you know, you need to can the wood because it's, you know, messing you up with your allergies. So put a gas stove in and never look back.
Yeah.
Jim, the previous program, I wrote down a number. I just want to verify it. How many stoves were changed out in a year?
214 in 2002.
That was 2002.
Two. Yeah.
Now, again, trying to put this all in perspective, that seems like a reasonably good, I should say a reasonably popular program. You didn't just, even though it was a small contribution to a relatively large
expense,
a lot of people bit. Has it been done since 2002?
No.
The flue requirement wasn't there then, though, right, in those early days?
Yeah, that predates me, so I'm just not totally sure.
So now you have a flue with the catalytic.
Oh, is that what it is, the catalytic? Because, my house was built in 98, and I had triple wall pipe inside and double wall all the way.
Personally, as we explore programs to put some of our reserves back to work in the community, I like a multi-prong approach. I like attacking it in different ways. City-county program is really important. I like the way that's headed, or where that's headed. And I like the BIN program as well. You know, smaller programs, multifaceted. This seems like in my mind, like a relatively good fit. I'm wondering why we shouldn't do it. I guess that's the approach I take to a program like this. It's been successful in the past. It's successful in other jurisdictions. Why wouldn't we do it? Any thoughts on that?
Well, the other thing you could do is offer
the other options before we start making this. Haven't even talked about the chipper program.
And we're not making any firm decisions here anyway. I'm just exploring why not.
Just a thought. I mean, as I sit here, you know, and I talked about the natural gas. If you could do that, one or the other, and if you wanted to put a new, you know, a lot of people like burning wood, period. You know, they have access to wood, and, you know, you could offer one or the other.
Any other thoughts? And we will explore these others, to John's point.
It just looks as though, and I think I've heard you say, Jim, that administratively it's kind of a difficult program.
Well, I think in looking at the way it was put together in 2013, I think it's a very appropriate way to design a change-out program. But just looking at, you know, the limited staff we have here,
right.
I think I could potentially come up with maybe a slight derivation of a program that would be a little more streamlined, straightforward, easier to administer.
If we're going to take this on, I would encourage that.
I like Lewis's point about natural gas, too. Again, bang for the buck occurring in the more compressed city-populated areas is one aspect of that. They also have the availability of natural gas in those areas, where the more rural areas is primarily propane if you're doing anything gas.
Well,
as far as that goes, if they wanted a propane stove, that's no big deal. That burns pretty clean, too, so.
But maybe if we concentrated in areas where
right.
where you get the most bang for the buck just because of the concentrated populations.
Well, and what Robin was saying earlier about coming down the grade and seeing the layer. So if it's in the fall and, you know, outdoor burning hasn't been reinitiated, then you can pretty much assume all that's coming from wood stoves. If you're seeing it and outdoor burning isn't permitted, then yeah, that's an impact directly related to wood stoves. Now, it doesn't impact the 8-hour ozone in our Jackson monitor, but still, it, you know, there could be some good done by reducing that.
Well, you know, without drawing any conclusions, Jim, why don't you dive into the wood chipper discussion, and then we'll circle back and see where this is going.
Sure. And you know, we have discussed, you know, a wood chipper, and especially, you know, in light of the tree mortality issue, increased volumes of materials, and obviously could add significantly to additional outdoor burning when it is permitted. You know, one idea that we've talked about here as district staff is consider a chip and grind days. You know, we might, district staff might set up on a Saturday with a chipping contractor at a designated location, and folks could bring their material in, and it would be chipped right there on site. We could make wood chips available to folks that wanted to take a load of chips back home, and then the remainder, as was mentioned, we could have go into a walking floor truck and be transported either to Vicini's or to wherever they would be able to go to. So that was just one thought I had on a chip, kind of chip and grind program. I know Merv's here, and he definitely has some thoughts on chipping. Yeah, that was something I wanted to just put out there as a potential program.
Before we dive into that, I'm going to show my ignorance here with respect to the tree mortality issue. The beetle that is causing the problem, take a dead tree, a tree that's been girdled by the beetle, chip it, all the chips to, you know, other parts of the county. Are we transporting live pests, or is that beetle long gone by the time that tree is
normally
long
that
gone?
Beetle is long gone.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thoughts on the wood chipper program?
Well, I like the idea. I obviously the bark beetle tree mortality issue is largely in District 3, so we need something to do with those dead trees once they're made from vertical to horizontal.
You've been practicing.
Did I get it right? Did I get it right?
Been practicing. She added backwards yesterday.
Tree mortality. Sorry, is the tree mortality? We seem to be at the in Amador County, sort of at the beginning of the wave, right?
Yes.
Seems like a massive problem, a problem of massive proportions.
Yep,
most likely
district probably doesn't have the resources to solve on its own, and
no,
maybe not even make a dent in a solution. And I worry about to deal with the tree mortality issue is going to take a lot of money from bigger fish than the air district.
Yeah.
And could, I just flopped this on the table, could our resources be better spent focusing on facilitation instead of actually grinding on the ground?
Mm-hmm.
Could we make a bigger impact that way? Just a thought. Rather than trying to grind material and...
Well, I think, you know, it could be a valuable resource in conjunction with everything else that's going to go on. I mean, the county itself has earmarked $500,000 to start taking down these trees in county right away, which creates a hazard towards infrastructure. So if we had a grinder and your grinding days, it would be, I think, could help a lot.
Say that out loud.
I think the question is, what do you mean by facilitation? Actually grinding.
I don't know what I mean. What I'm saying is, I think the little tiny bit of good, tiny bit of material that our resources could be spent on to grind is small enough that I don't know that it will have a real impact. And I wonder if we can have a bigger impact.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I wonder if we can have a bigger impact in another way.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know. I can't answer that either. But we are relatively desperate now to find, you know, something to do with those dead trees. And so even if the impact was relatively small compared to trees being sent to Ampine for particle board or whatever, I can't be objective about this.
Well,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's tough because there's so many different things going on there. I mean, Ampine will take the trees, but it has to be hauled in by professionals.
Right.
You know, they have to have a logging truck and appropriate people running the loaders and all of that. So
right.
If you don't have that, they're not taking it. You can't drive up with your trailer and dump the stuff off.
Right.
So.
And I strongly expect that if we did have a chipper day, you know, once a month or something, you'd be overloaded with people coming up, possibly with, you know, cut up dead pine beetle trees. I don't know. I expect so.
Well, and just so you know, this idea of Chip and Grind Saturday, you know, Matt and Chris and I have started talking about this really before the Butte fire, before the tree mortality thing kind of kicked off. We were talking in terms as kind of to augment what programs we saw possible here. So really, you're absolutely right. I don't think this in any way gets close to the scope of the problem. The scope of this problem is gonna be huge. It is huge. And part of the problem is it hasn't been defined. I mean, the trees really need to be, you know, there needs to be accounted for. How many trees? How many properties? How many, you know, what are we talking about? And when you start looking at that, start totaling up the trees, yeah, the problem is way bigger than the Air District can really do. However, you know, this is one piece of the big picture. You know, if there's a big picture solution to this problem, the Air District, you know, I see as one small piece of that. So, no easy answer.
No, it's not. I'm
a lot of players involved in this task force too, and that's the other thing.
Yep.
More players, more complicated to get.
And we expect, you know, you're correct, Robin, that the problem is only estimated in terms of its magnitude right now, and there's going to be another Forest Service flyover at the end of August, and the numbers are going to only increase.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about 30%.
4,000-something trees in this county, correct?
Right. Correct.
Correct. Back to our chipper thing and these boxes we got scattered all over upcountry. If we took the money and bought a chipper and had an area upcountry and let the people bring the material to that site and we grind it, say, into Ace's walking floors and haul it to my place or to the Cogen or something, we could do away with those boxes, which is costing you $70,000 a year, and we could put that towards a grinder and still alleviate the problem of...
You're getting to where people need to haul it to a...
Right, to
well,
a
Well, they
site.
Need to haul it to
they're
a hauling
it,
of a
they're
box.
They've got it in their truck. So what's the difference if they haul it to that bin or if they haul it to, say, Lynn and I are working real hard to try to get the old cedar mill. If we could get that site, then they could come there, dump. There's a little guard shack there. We could put somebody in that guard shack to kind of check their vehicles that they're not bringing garbage,
right,
everything else. And then when we get a pretty good pile, we'll call up Aces. They bring a walking floor in there. He says he's got one or two extra ones. We can fill them up, and hopefully the cogen starts up, and
we can take it down there and the county can make a couple bucks off of it. You know, because they pay, I don't know, $35 or $40 a dry ton for it. So at least it would pay the Aces transportation and maybe a little more. And
well, you're touching on what's been my stump speech for a while on this tree mortality thing, and that is it's going to take a free market solution to solve a problem of this magnitude, because there's not enough government money from all the agencies in the world to fully alleviate the scope of this problem statewide. So somehow we've got to create a market for the product.
Right.
If that's one way of doing it, great. I still think that, you know, pelletized for pellet wood stoves, if we could, you know, get out of the way of that happening in the form of alleviating some of our authority to construct and all of those types of charges, if there's some way we could incentivize an organization to locate here locally that made wood pellets. You go through the stores, most of them are imported from Idaho now. Well, if we can afford the shipping costs from Idaho to California.
Right. Well, even one of these fencing outfits makes you, if a guy can put in a small mill that makes these board fences. I mean,
yeah.
You know, all the neighborhoods use board fences.
Yeah.
And you
wouldn't take too big a mill to.
You're touching now
that.
on my earlier point, and that was, it seems like the Air District's best fit role isn't necessarily to grind the material, but to facilitate a program, incentivize programs that will have a much bigger impact in the end. And if that is waiving fees or sponsoring industry, I don't know what it means.
Yeah,
but
if it's doable. I mean, you've got to have somebody willing to step
in. The only thing is this grinder deal is, Amador County has got, I don't know how many miles of road, within 200 feet of the road, all the trees have to come down that are dead. If the county had their own grinder, that's going to save them the money.
Would,
you know,
help,
you
could
pay
process.
Me to operate it, but be your guys' machine, and it'll save you the expense of a contractor bringing in a high-priced grinder and doing it. And then we got the grinder at the end of the project. And they're just dumping the money off to some guy from, well, like Calaveras County, the biggest part of them are from way back east, people that are doing all this work. None of the money's staying in the county.
Tennessee.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And now CDF wants to try to do a lot of our stuff here in the county.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Great state grant money and give it to a state agency.
Yeah. One state agency, give it to another one. Well, that's just food for thought, but.
Merv, what type of grinder? We use the term grinding and we use the term
chipper. Well, I think a chipper would be better for this.
Because it creates a landscaping product.
Right. Cal Fire just bought some in the neighborhood of, I think, $100,000. They're a little track machine and they take up to, I think, about an 18 or 20 inch log. And they do have a chute
direction
bends
chute,
that you could, like along the county roads, we could just blow stuff back on the banks, and it's remote control, and you do have to feed it, but well, like a little excavator with a thumb on it, you could feed it or feed it by hand, but one little excavator could feed as much as, you know, a whole hand crew can feed, you know, a whole lot faster.
Well, I'm all for it, and I don't see it as something, even once we conquer this tree mortality problem, it's going to have demand.
Right. And 90% of our roads right now in the county need thinning alongside the roads even before the tree problem. It's, you know, it's something needs to be done.
Chips.
Yeah. But we do need the cogen. Everybody needs to try to push to get this cogen up and running again.
Oh, we all agree with that, but I guess unfortunately they're in litigation, so we'll find out.
I know.
Thank you, Merv.
Oh, yeah.
Jim, what are you looking for today?
Well, I think so far I got scratched the lawnmower. I think we can take that off. Wood stove, I could bring back more information on a more streamlined, you know, simplified program for consideration. The chipper.
Is the board okay with that? It seems like a reasonable.
I think that would be a good idea. In fact, I'd encourage you to work with Steve Stokes in the building department, too, to ascertain modern-day codes, to Lewis's point, of how much more cost-effective initial replacement may be to go to gas-fired.
The gas,
rather than
that
pelletized.
Should be included in your analysis.
Okay.
And I certainly like the thought of the chipper, looking at that. I mean,
I do too.
I've got reservations. I don't mind telling you, but I think of all the programs we've discussed today, that's the one that needs the most study. Yes, yeah, that's the one that needs to be vetted the most significantly. And
well, maybe what we could look at there is maybe we could check out Cal Fire's chipper and see how they're working out for them. You know, I hate to plead my ignorance, but what about a tub grinder, Merv? They're big for stumps, or...
Yeah, maybe a tub grinder would work perfect.
You know, they're probably a lot more expensive, huh?
Yeah.
Just remember, we're an air district, and whatever we do has to have a nexus to air quality, and if, you know, if we're talking about all of these bug trees, you know, would they be piled up in piles and burned if we didn't grind them? I'm not certain about that. So, you know, we've got to think about air quality here and
either
make sure
intentionally that... intentionally or unintentionally.
They might in a wildfire. I was just going to say.
I get that.
Yeah.
But we need to make sure that there's some nexus to air quality here, and you know, we can't save the world except to the degree it has an impact on air quality.
You know, and the biggest problem is private property owners with these dead trees on them, and you know, and that's an almost insurmountable issue for some people. A lot of folks just don't have the money to deal with it, and so we have to figure out how that's going to play out, whether we're going to get federal disaster declaration and all that stuff. It still remains to be seen, but it is going to be a problem for folks, and it's going to be a life, health, and safety problem for a lot of folks before this is all over.
Scheme
of things, if we're all working together.
Should we look at the chipper question some more for next week?
Certainly a lot of interest at the board, so okay. Yes.
Please.
But tell us how it relates to air quality, and bring us some complete thoughts so that we really have something to chew on.
Okay.
One other food for thought was, remember I was trying to get a grant to buy a new big chipper, and you people graciously was going to give me about $80,000 at that time towards a new one. I'm still open to, if you guys wanted to fund it, maybe we could fund me with this machine. And I'll rent it at a low cost to the county to do it.
Thanks, Murph.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, Jim, are we done with that?
Yeah, I think so.
Lynn is going to have to leave here very soon, so let's move on to item number 7.
Yeah, I think we can get through this really quickly. Item 7, what I have on here is the Center for Biological Diversity BVBP settlement update, and there's an email from Greg Gillott talking about his understanding of how the agreement is in currently stands, and a couple things. He says that he doesn't believe they've characterized it as a permanent shutdown at this point. So he says that technically he would say the agreement remains in effect. But then he goes on to say that the Air District is an well, the agreement is between CBD and BVBP, and the Air District does not have standing to enforce it. So the Air District is not a party to the agreement, and the only third party allowed to enforce the agreement is the Community Review Committee. So essentially what he's saying is we're really not we don't so much have a dog in this fight. It's not up to us whether they pay us or not.
CCAD program?
Okay. CCAD, I included the letter that we sent out just after the 1st of July, and so far we have gotten a response. I believe the City of Jackson is pursuing this for a generator at the firehouse. The Amador Water Agency is pursuing it for a generator. Public Works, Amador County Public Works, is pursuing it for an air compressor. And I think Sutter Creek, Matt, is...
Sutter Creek, well, they have three units.
But the one...
considering, but one is the spray...
Yeah, Hydrovac.
Spray vacuum.
Yes. So they have it on order, and there was going to be an extended time, but they look like they will shortly be coming into queue. So we could have four projects right now lined up, and at maximum amount, that would be $100,000 we would expend on those projects. So I think it shows our program is has some merit and some interest in it out there.
And we talked about the significance of the program and a press release to make sure that somebody else besides us knows about it.
Yes.
That would be a good idea if you and your staff can put that together when we actually start to see money change hands.
Absolutely.
That would be a good idea.
We actually already have those things drafted up and ready. We were just trying to get things rolling, and once we got it started, we were going to then pursue that.
Great, yeah. Thanks.
Hey, we've got a new individual with a degree in marketing and business administration.
Yeah.
Seems like a fit.
So then we have the current financials that are attached. As usual, feel free to take a look at that. And then it looks like the last thing we have is the correspondence thank you note from the Woodland Road Association. And that's the last item in your agenda packet.
For full disclosure, that's where I live. And they just think this district and especially Chris walk on water. So.
Well, okay. Any last comments? Our next meeting is October 18 at 1:30. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.